It's time to laugh, to win, and to live the thrill of the action.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. What the hell's going on out here?
No idea what's going on, but I am excited.
Every pick, every play, every game-changing moment. This is You Better You Bet, brought to you by BetMGM on Westwood One Sports.
I feel like somebody needs to give me the Brian Dennehy speech in Rambo. It's over, Johnny. It's over. Steelers, dog walked by the Texans last night, and they are done. Can the Texans replicate that in Foxborough? Chris Mack in for Nick Kostos here on You Better You Bet on Westwood One Sports. Always inside the Westwood One Sports app, and you can watch the show on YouTube. Go to youtube.com/TheKostos, K-O-S-T-O-S, at TheKostos. Nick will be back tomorrow. Brooks Austin is going to join me a little more than a half hour from now to talk college ball, national championship game, Miami, Indiana, possible CFP expansion, all that fun stuff, and we'll get back into a deep dive on where the Pittsburgh Steelers go from here 1 hour from now. Lucky enough now, though, to be joined by Frank Schwab, covers the NFL for Yahoo Sports. Morning, Frank. How are you? And how surprised were you, or maybe unsurprised, that the Steelers went out with the whimper that they did last night to the hands of that Texans defense?
Yeah, I didn't get much right this weekend, but I did get that right because I just looked up. I was saying, how could the Steelers score against the Texans? I didn't mean it literally, though. I thought the Steelers would at least get one touchdown on the board. Nothing from them. And look, it's part of this is the Texans. The Texans defense is nasty. That's a championship quality defense. Really, really good. But part of it is the Steelers. This has just been a mediocre team all year. I really don't know how they got the 10 wins. I looked at this team midseason and was like, they are going to fade and fade hard. They didn't. And that's a credit to them, credit to Mike Tomlin and all that. But they were going to get exposed eventually in the playoffs. If it wasn't this round, it was the next round. So not terribly surprised. But yes, the way they got just beat up on offense was a little surprising to that extent.
What should their plan be? Forget Tomlin for now and what his future may or may not hold, but I'll put you in the Pittsburgh Steelers front office for just a couple of minutes. What is the plan for a team that has been playing quarterback roulette for the past half decade in an offseason where there just aren't a lot of great options out there?
Right, and that's a problem. Any quarterback who's available is usually not an optimal selection. You could go get Kirk Cousins. Where does that get you? Malik Willis, maybe he's the man. Maybe he's going to be the next great quarterback to come off the scrap heap and revive his career. I don't know that you can depend on that. You don't have a draft pick where you're going to get somebody, especially in this class, where you feel really good about it. Why they passed on Jackson Dart, I'll never know. That was a ready-made pick for them, and they should have made it. The Giants did. They should feel pretty good about it, too. So I don't know what they do. I honestly think we're to the point with the Steelers where they just need to rebuild. It's not just the quarterback. It is the defense is really, really old, and it looked the part many, many times this season. I don't know how it gets better next year. On offense, they just don't have a lot. DK Metcalf is fine, but he's not carrying an offense by himself. I think it's just to the point where the Steelers need to say, we just need to go in a completely different direction. We need to tear it down a little bit to build back up. And I don't think they want to do that. They're going to look at it and say, we just won a division. We won 10 games. We're not the type of team that's just going to voluntarily take a 4-win season. We're the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I think they're just stuck. They're stuck in the middle, and that's been the problem. They've been stuck in the middle for years and years now.
Yeah, it's been to folks who are in different markets, you know, your Arizonas, your Carolinas, teams where winning is not an every year thing. It more jumps up and bites you by surprise sometimes. It's hard to accept the fact that a team would want to walk away from a relationship with a perennial winner like Mike Tomlin, who's never had a losing season. But in those places like Pittsburgh, New England, Green Bay, where winning is the bare minimum and it's got to go another level or two higher, there is this standard that Tomlin has not met. He's tied with Marvin Lewis now for the most consecutive playoff losses at 7. And I'm curious, I'll put you again, you're in the Steelers front office, so I'll promote you, Frank. I'll put you all the way up in the owner's suite at 3400 South Water Street and ask you, what would you do with Mike Tomlin? He's got a year left on his deal. He's got an option that needs to be decided if they're going to pick up for 2027 by March. Would you give him the option to coach it out as a lame duck and let him then make the decision if he wants to move on or not?
I think I would just start over. And it goes back to the rebuild. If you want to rebuild, just clean it out. Just start over. You don't want Mike Tomlin going through that. Mike Tomlin doesn't want to go through it. He's got other options. He's a great, great coach. I've always said this about the Steelers. Their next coach is very, very, very unlikely to be as good as Mike Tomlin has been. Really, that's the truth. Like he's got a Hall of Fame resume if you compare it to other guys in the Hall of Fame. But sometimes there's just a change needs to be made. So if I was guiding the Steelers here, I would just say we're getting further and further away from the goal of being a Super Bowl contender. Yeah, we're winning games and not having losing seasons and barely making the playoffs, and that's great. That's fine. But we're not close to being a Super Bowl contender. So we're starting the whole thing over. And you sit down to Mike Tomlin and say, how do we do this right way? Because we're not just firing you the 12 hours after a playoff loss. You deserve better than that. I think it's a mutual parting of ways. And then Mike Tomlin could go. Mike Tomlin and John Harbaugh then would be the one and two candidates on the entire market. If Mike Tomlin wants to keep coaching, he'd have any open job he wants, unless Harbaugh takes it first. So I think this could work out for everybody. And Andy Reid with the Eagles type of situation, the comparison everybody has made, I think that can happen here with the Steelers and Tomlin. But I just think it's run its course in Pittsburgh. This whole group with Tomlin, what you run it back to try to win 9 games next year? Like, I don't know that's really a goal anybody has in Pittsburgh.
Frank Schwab covers the NFL for Yahoo Sports. Love his insights, and he's with us here on You Better You Bet. Chris Mack in for Nick Costos today. And then you've got Texans fans who are waking up this morning in Houston saying, hey, great, everybody talk about the Steelers and what happens with them. What about us? We just dominated them on the road. First road victory in franchise history. We survived our quarterback with the drop season. Our defense was as dominant as it's been all year. How far can the Texans ride that if CJ Stroud cleans up some of the mistakes from last night?
Oh, they can absolutely go to the Super Bowl. I mean, that defense, look, I'm based in Colorado. I watched the 2015 Broncos very closely. They had a quarterback who had a big name, but had a 69 passer rating that year, and they made a Super Bowl, won a Super Bowl, because that defense was awesome. You can still win that way in the NFL. It's not easy. It's not preferred, but you can do it. And I think the Texans defense is the best unit left in the playoffs. It was the best unit in the playoffs when we started the playoffs. It's absolutely awesome. I mean, for everybody who's saying, oh, Josh Allen, this is his year, he's going to make a Super Bowl. I watched that game. I think it was week 12. It was a Thursday night. They destroyed Josh Allen in that game. They sacked him like 8 times. This Houston Texans team is really good. Now, the one thing I will say is losing Nico Collins, and I don't anticipate he's going to play next week, it's massive for them because he needs something on offense. You need a little bit, and Nico Collins is by far and away their best offensive player. Not having him for the next round and maybe beyond, who knows? That didn't look great. I just wonder if that's kind of their fatal flaw right now. But yes, all their games are going to be, 12 to 10 the rest of the way, maybe. And they can win that way. So, yeah, the Texans can make a Super Bowl. I have no doubt about that.
Did you wake up like me and first thing you looked at when you saw the total coming out on Houston, New England was, oh, okay, you're going to give me something in the 40s? Yeah, I'll take the under before that thing dives any farther.
Yeah, right. I am so regretful that I literally forgot to bet the Pittsburgh Steelers team total under yesterday because I thought about it. And then I just during the game, I'm like, oh, wait, I forgot to do that. Yeah. So, yes, I look, the Patriots defense, all of a sudden, where did that come from last week? It's not like the Patriots defense is coming off a bad game and they're just going to allow CJ Stroud to shred them. They looked really good against Justin Herbert and that Chargers offense. So I think it was absolutely a defensive game. And Drake May's had a great, great season. He's a really, really good player. I don't think he's just going to go out there and put 30 on the Texans. I don't foresee that being a possibility. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a really low scoring game.
The other side of the AFC bracket, the Bills going to Denver. I get it. The Broncos defense is really, really good. And Sean Payton seems to know just what buttons to push and when to push them. I still have my questions about Bo Nix. Is that fair to have, or does he get an opportunity here against a Bills defense where the Broncos could go out and they could win a game 28-24 if they have to against Buffalo?
I think they could. I mean, the offense has been really inconsistent, but there are moments when you say, all right, that looks pretty good. It wasn't against the Chargers week 18, I'll tell you that. But like everybody likes to talk about their Giants win, like it was a massive fluke, and it was in many ways. They still did put up 33 points in a quarter. Like this isn't an offense where you're just like, there's just no way. The Steelers offense, there's no way they're going to be. The Broncos can move the ball. They can score points. It just comes and goes for them. Let's put it that way. I like them a lot, actually. I think they've been underrated all season. And a lot of it goes back to that Giants game. For some reason, I think people watched that game, saw the highlights, whatever, and just decided they're on the spot. Well, the Broncos are a lucky team. They're not that good. I don't buy that. Yes, they've won a lot of close games. That's usually an indicator of a lucky team. But that's the way this team is built. They're built, play defense, have Sean Payton manage a game in the fourth quarter, one of the best coaches in the NFL. And that gives them an edge, kind of like the Chiefs of 2024. And so I just think they've been underrated all year. People wrote them off as a lucky team. They won 14 games. They're at home this week in the altitude. The Buffalo Bills have a short week. Like, there's a lot going against the Bills here. Josh Allen has like 17 different injuries after that Jacksonville game. I actually like the Broncos. I get it. Josh Allen could carry this Bills team all the way to a championship, of course. Like, he's the best quarterback on the planet right now. But I just think this Broncos team has been overlooked all year. And I'm honestly not sure exactly why that is, because all they've done, they've won. What is it, 14 or last 15 games? They're a really good football.
Yeah. As an aside to the Bills win in Jacksonville, do you think the 9-yard pickup of Josh Allen by the offensive line and carrying him down the field to the goal line like he was a bag of groceries, does that finally get us a ban? I have not been anti-tush push the last couple of years. I've just said, hey, if you can run it, run it. And if you can't defend it, figure out a way to defend it. But does this finally get us over the line for banning the tush push this offseason?
It might. And if you remember, one of the teams that was against the tush push was the Bills. They didn't want that thing. And they're probably because they don't want Josh Allen to get hurt. But yeah, I think, look, the argument I've always settled on, and I have been, you know, stop it. It's perfectly legal. Go ahead and stop it. If you're going to stop plays that are unstoppable, then Derrick Henry can't run off left tackle anymore because we can't stop that. Like, you know, like it gets silly at times. But the one argument is, look, the left wing lock in a neutral zone trap in the NHL, they said the Devils in the mid-90s, they said, you've done it great. You've kind of ruined the game. It's not aesthetically pleasing. We're having this out of the game. The shift in baseball. People said, well, that was really smart. You didn't do anything wrong, but it's not good for the game. It's not good for the watchability of the game. And so we're getting that out of here. And I think the same thing for tush push. When people line up for the tush push, you kind of roll your eyes and say, this is really not a great play. It's not a competitive play. Why is this in here? I think that's ultimately what gets that out. Instead of just making up something out of thin air, like saying like, oh, we're going to have injuries, even though we haven't yet, we're going to have injuries with this play. That's never been a great argument.
Yeah, I saw that play on that final drive by Buffalo, and I said, what are we doing at this point?
Yeah,
the offensive linemen are literally carrying Josh Allen down the field. I want to talk NFC, obviously, since we've got you here. Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports with us on You Better You Bet. Chris Mack in for Nick Kostos on Westwood One Sports. How do the Niners survive George Kittle's absence? They got through it in Philly because the Eagles' offense is their own unmitigated disaster, but this is on the road at Seattle against that defense. I mean, you can get Christian McCaffrey 35 touches, I guess, and say a prayer or two. But after their performance against them in week 18, I don't know what the hope is or what the avenue is to stealing a victory for the Niners.
There is one avenue, and his name is Kyle Shanahan. He's your coach of the year. I don't even know why this is a debate anymore. It blows me away when Kyle Shanahan's not the obvious coach of the year. Why is coach of the year so broken where we have to give it to a new coach who, hey, he did so much better than Matt Eberflus. Well, okay. Like the bar was pretty low. Like, yeah, you should hop over that. Well, you were so much better than Jared Mayo was last year. All right. Well, who was the best coach in the NFL this season? It was Kyle Shanahan, period. Hard stop. Like, I can't believe they're in the position they are after dealing with the injuries they dealt with. And so I sit here and say, yeah, the 49ers have no chance. Like they are going to get blown out by the Seahawks team without George Kittle. They got dominated at home by a really, really good defense in week 18. There's no chance for them. But I've been saying that all year about the 49ers. And Kyle Shanahan just keeps pulling rabbits out of his hat. Robert Saleh, too. Robert Saleh's had a great, great year as defensive coordinator. I don't know how he's doing it with that crew. They don't have much talent on that defense, but they always seem to make the plays they need to make to win games. So that's it. Can Kyle and Robert Saleh do this yet again? I can't give you a better answer than that, because I don't think there is one. They're very, very overmatched right here as far as just manpower goes, but they've been proving everybody wrong all season.
Yeah, that seven and a half feels a little heavy, but just based on the way the Seahawks have played games this year, I would be tempted to pick up the 7.5 with the Niners and just hope for, like you said, some Kyle Shanahan magic. The other NFC divisional round game, Rams on the road at the Bears. I'm done counting the Bears out, Frank. I'm done. And I could watch 55 minutes of a game and say, man, this Chicago offense stinks. What's wrong with these guys? And they'll cook up something in the last 2.5-3 minutes and steal a game.
Yeah, I know. It's the same. I everybody got on me for 6 weeks ago saying the Bears were frauds. At the time, my argument was, all you've done is win close games against bad teams. You need block field goal to beat the Raiders, and you needed Jackson Dart to suffer a concussion to beat the Giants at home. Like, this was not a powerhouse team, but I think they have played better. Like, and like you said, like, they just have this belief late in the game, we're going to come back and we're going to win. Caleb Williams has that belief. And I don't think this is a great matchup for the Rams, who I think are the better team. Like, the Rams are one of the top two teams in the NFL along with Seattle. I think pretty much everybody agrees on that at this point. I will say this about the Rams, though. Since the fourth quarter at Seattle, they lost, obviously, that Seattle game. Come back and lose after that and against the Falcons. And Sean McVay says, I need to play my starters in week 18. My team's not playing well right now. He knew. That was a very un-McVay response. And he understood, my team is not great right now. They did not play that well against the Cardinals in week 18. They just pulled away from a bad team in the fourth quarter. And then they should have lost to the Carolina Panthers. The Rams have not played good football in a month. And their secondary is not great. And you're going against a team that can throw the ball and has multiple options in the receiving corps at tight end, Loveland coming alive. I don't think it's a great match. I was surprised the line was as high as it was. I thought it would be a field goal tops. I saw it at 4.5 early in the week. I thought that was really high. I think the Bears can stick in this game just because of their belief, their momentum, and also just the Rams not playing very good football late.
Yeah, they found it in pockets late against Carolina, but that's against the Carolina Panthers. How much? Yeah. And you talked about week 18 playing the starters against, well, Arizona. I don't know how much stock we put in.
They were losing in that game in the second half. They were either trailing or tied in the third quarter. And then they finally were like, all right, we'll blow a stiff wind and beat the Carolina Panther or the Arizona Cardinals. But they didn't play well in that game either. Like, that, if you watch that game, you know, like, that this Rams team has not played well in a really long time.
Follow him on social media at Yahoo Schwab. Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports covers the NFL, does so exceedingly well. We appreciate the time today, man. Thank you.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports here on You Better You Bet. Chris Mack in for Nick Kostos. Always inside the Westwood One Sports app, and we've got you covered with college football before the end of the hour. Brooks Austin, recruiting director for SI from the Film Guy Network, going to join us to talk about Miami, Indiana. But coming up next, I've figured out, after all the mean mugging and the sour faces, even when they're up by 5 touchdowns, all the memes, I've figured out exactly who Kurt Cignetti really is, and I'll tell you who. Next, here on You Better You Bet on Westwood One Sports.
People really don't know our team. They don't know what we're made of, what we got, and I get it. I think a lot of that negative stuff in the media fueled the guys returning from this team.
This is You Better You Bet, presented by BetMGM on Westwood One Sports.
I'm Chris Mack in for Nick Kostos today here on You Better You Bet on Westwood One Sports. Coming up in less than 20 minutes, about 15 actually, Brooks Austin, recruiting director for SI, the Film Guy Network, going to join us and tell us what exactly Miami can do to beat Indiana on Monday night in the national championship game. And we'll get back into a discussion about where the hell the Pittsburgh Steelers go from here, if anywhere. Or do they just run it back and do the same damn thing again? That coming up at the top of the hour, 11 a.m. Eastern, here on You Better You Bet on Westwood One Sports, inside the Westwood One Sports app. You can watch the show, too, on YouTube. Go to youtube.com/@TheKostos, T-H-E-K-O-S-T-O-S. Nick will be back tomorrow. Yet here we are, getting you through the day after the finale of Wild Card Weekend, looking ahead to the divisional round as well. And as I mentioned, the national championship game now just 6 days away. And I figured out exactly who Kurt Cignetti is. I figured it out. Kurt Cignetti, with all the sourpuss faces when they're up by four touchdowns, with all the, oh, everybody doubts us. And listen, Kurt, at this point, you're 15-0. I don't know how many people are doubting that you're going to walk into Miami and handle the Hurricanes. But I appreciate your moxie, right? I appreciate the commitment to the bit. I appreciate you standing up and bullying the bullies right back. I figured out who Kurt Cignetti is. He's Ralphie in A Christmas Story. And I don't mean through the totality of the movie. I mean that one very specific instance. Look, you just watched it 75 times last month. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Kurt Cignetti is Ralphie in A Christmas Story when the switch gets flipped and he just beats the snot, the ever-loving snot out of Scott Farkas in that back alley. When he's had enough, when he can only look at that yellow-toothed mug, he's had it. He can't do it anymore. And Scott Farkas is, nah, ha, ha, with that annoying laugh and that stupid hat. And Ralphie snaps. Ralphie goes off and just starts bullying the bully, pummeling Scott Farkas until he's crying and asking for mercy. That's what Kurt Cignetti is. Indiana had been Ralphie and his friends for the last, 60 years, losing his college football program at the D1 level. And then Cignetti walked in and he'd had enough. Kurt Cignetti is Ralphie from A Christmas Story. So let's call this a character study of Kurt Cignetti. He's bullying back the bullies. I think that tracks, doesn't it, Bill? That Kurt Cignetti is our Ralphie standing up for us against that bully Scott Farkas.
Yeah, I like that comp. I think that's an interesting way to look at this one, because I agree with you. Cignetti's stance, and he's not the first coach that's done this, but Cignetti's stance of just trying to find that underdog role when it's not there is interesting.
Yeah, so that's my character study for today. I have some others in mind, but I thought, what the hell? Let's open it up to the room and talk about, one thing we love in sports talk radio are comparisons and analogies. We love them. So let's make some to some of the best or some of our favorite characters from movies and TV shows over the years. Who is your character study on?
All right. I actually have two for you, Chris. So I'm going to give them to you. And I'm going to preface this first one that if you have not seen the movie Usual Suspects, and you plan to, it's 30 years old, turn the radio down for about 20 seconds, 30 seconds, and come back. And then you won't have the ending ruined. But Ben Johnson is Kaiser Soze, because he is the ultimate guy of setting it up. This is a guy who, he looks like he's verbal Kint the first half. Like the offense looks disjointed, the defense is getting smoked. They don't know what's going on. And then in the fourth quarter, something clicks. Ben's been doing all this research, right, for three quarters. He's been taking in all this information, and he snaps, and he becomes Kaiser Soze, and he has set up the police department, and he walks out of that game with a victory. So that is my first one, Ben Johnson, Kaiser Soze.
And then before you can even shake his hand, he's gone.
Exactly. My next one, Chris. Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. My next one is C.J. Stroud, and this one might be a little weird, but I like this. C.J. Stroud is Indiana Jones, not through the entirety of the movie franchise, but in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Because here's the one thing people forget about Raiders of the Lost Ark. Indiana Jones lost. He didn't do anything right in that movie. He kept losing to the Nazis every step of the way. He's getting locked into caverns with snakes. He's getting tied up at the end of the movie. He keeps losing every step of the way. But he did one thing right. He closed his eyes when they opened the Ark of the Covenant. And the Ark of the Covenant is the Houston Texans defense, obliterating anything in its path. And C.J. Stroud just has to stay out of the way. And that's all he did. And at the end of the movie, Indiana Jones is still standing and he's the only one there. So the Houston Texans are the Ark of the Covenant and CJ Stroud is Indiana Jones. It doesn't matter what he does wrong. He still wins.
Does that make Gillette Stadium the Temple of Doom and make Mike Vrabel that crazy voodoo doctor who rips people's hearts out?
Rips hearts out
before they get dropped into the flames. Yeah. If Stroud plays anything like he did last night. Yeah, definitely. All right. I want to continue our character study here. Tyler, who do you have on the list? If we're going to go around and compare people to our favorite characters.
So yeah, I am not a big movie guy. People on the show know this. People who have listened know this. But I immediately thought about this one when we talked about this on the phone. A.J. Brown is Andy Dufresne from Shawshank Redemption. Like, he's been plotting his escape for months at this point. And now that the season's finally over, he's signing jerseys for all the players. He's outside the NovaCare Center in Philadelphia on his knees, like, thanking to, like, looking at the heavens, like, I'm finally out of here. I'm finally free. So Andy Dufresne, that was the one that came up to me. And, like, a side note, I'm an Eagles fan. I don't agree with Nick. I don't think they should trade A.J. Brown. I think this is kind of an easy fix. But I thought this was, like, A.J. Brown finally gets this escape from Philadelphia and gets to go somewhere else. And I think they eventually will trade him.
Nick Sirianni walks back into the locker room. Just a poster up on the wall. Throws that pebble right through it. What say you, Miss Fuzzy Britches? Just up and vanish like a fart in the wind. That could be A.J. Brown. I like that. Just standing outside the Shawshank prison, letting the rain wash down and absolve him of all that he did in Philadelphia. Kenny, do you have one for us? Give me a character study.
I was going to give you Caleb Williams being Superman, but that's kind of his nickname, and we all kind of know that.
Oh, so. My God. Fanboy. Can you fanboy any harder, Kenny?
No, I'm on cloud nine right now, but I'll give you another one. I'll give you another USC quarterback. Okay. I'm going to compare Sam Darnold to Rocky Balboa. And you guys may not like this, but he was once an underdog, and now Tom Brady and Peyton Manning are the only three quarterbacks in NFL history to win 14 games in a row, back-to-back years. So now he's here. He's just going to probably have to knock out Drago, which you could say is Matthew Stafford.
Yeah. That also means that at some point there's going to be a downfall, and he's going to have to go train Tommy Morris.
Well, that was last year, right? With the Vikings.
Okay. So maybe this is the upswing again. That roller coaster story of Rock. Everybody in Philadelphia is now choking on their breakfast, listening to us compare Sam Darnold to Rocky Balboa, who they consider an actual real person rather than a fictional character. Anybody else before we wrap up our character studies as we go around the room? Anybody, jump in if you have one, because I have one more that I want to take us to break with. Mike, what do you have?
All right, this is a deep cut right here, but if anyone's seen the John Carpenter classic movie The Thing, I think Nick Sirianni is MacReady in that just nobody trusts anybody anymore, and we're all very tired.
And we're all very tired. That's about the most apt description of how people probably feel in Philadelphia after this season. We're all very tired. The best was the clip I saw from the local news in Philadelphia with the little kid saying that he wanted Kevin Petullo down the street at McDonald's flipping burgers rather than staying on as offensive coordinator. One more. At this point, Aaron Rodgers has to be Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon and has to just look around and say, I'm too old for this bleep. That's it. He's done. He's cooked. It's over. So those are our character studies today here on You Better You Bet. Chris Mack in for Nick Kostos here on Westwood One Sports. We want to get into the actual football of the national championship game after I brought up Kurt Cignetti and compared him to Ralphie from A Christmas Story. And we will do that. Can the Miami Hurricanes stack up enough defense in Fernando Mendoza's way to win a national championship after getting in on the bubble to the CFP in the first place? From the Film Guy Network, recruiting director for Sports Illustrated, Brooks Austin joins us next here on You Better You Bet on Westwood One Sports. Chris Mack in for Nick Kostos on You Better You Bet today here on Westwood One Sports, always inside the Westwood One Sports app as well. Top of the hour, I cry some more about the Steelers, and we'll try to get me through an emotional morning after very little sleep. But I got to pivot away from the NFL for just a bit to talk college ball with our guy Brooks Austin of the Film Guy Network on YouTube, recruiting director at SI as well. Follow him on social media, please, at Brooks Austin BA. Morning, Brooks. How you doing? How's the coffee going down?
Hey, look, man, it's going down all right. It's going down all right this morning. You know, everybody tries their new things in January. We were just talking before the break. I'm doing the black coffee thing. It just feels torturous. It feels like self-punishment. But you know what? The best things in life require a little bit of discipline. So here's to it this morning.
Cheers. Is there any way? Give me a way the Miami Hurricanes make this a game against Indiana.
Why are we doing this? I don't want to do this. It's weird. It's weird like that. This Miami, look, I know what the line is. It's 9 points. Like, mm-hmm. I know everybody expects Miami expects Indiana to control the football game because they've seen what Indiana has done the first two playoff matchups, right? They thumped Alabama and they thumped Oregon. And everybody expects them to control this football game so much so that we're doing the how do they have a chance? How do they get? I mean, guys, they have a chance by shrinking the football game, running the ball, and controlling possession. That, I mean, they have a chance. They have more than a chance, by the way, in my opinion, because they have a really, really good defense as well, does Miami. And they're playing really, really good football at this point. Do I expect them to win the football game? I have no idea. I haven't picked the football game yet. But, man, they're not a bad football team. I know Indiana's great. I don't know Indiana's played really, really well. I also think there's this, like, really weird thing about Miami where no, I don't think anybody expected them to beat Texas A&M on the road, and then they did that. And I know there wasn't a soul, including Vegas, there wasn't a soul picking Miami to beat Ohio State, and they controlled that football game for four quarters. And then all of a sudden they become like, oh, does Ole Miss have a chance against them in the Fiesta Bowl? And now they're back to the woe is me, how does little old Miami figure out this football game? I think all that is noise. You know what I'm saying? At this point, I think we could talk about how do we actually find ways to win the football game as a team. And if you're going to beat Indiana, you got to play clean for four quarters. That you cannot have moments of stagnation. You cannot have moments of self-inflicted wounds. You cannot have these things. You have to execute for the 70 snaps that they may allow you to have. This is a weird operation that Indiana's got going on because, and I say weird because in the history of college football, if you don't have the talent, if you don't have the quote-unquote blue chippers, if you're doing it through the portal, if you're doing it through restacking and rebuilding your roster every single year, normally you have to have some type of schematic advantage. You have to get some type of math tilt, right? Like in basketball, it's, oh, we're undersized guard play. Okay, we got to shoot 40% and lot from three to overcome the math, right? Same thing in football. We got to take a lot of snaps. We got to burn a lot of plays. We got to get a lot of opportunities. That's not what Indiana does. Indiana has not taken 70 offensive snaps since the Penn State football game. They want to take 60 snaps. They want to grind it out. They want to get into a bunch of third and twos, and they want to box your lights out with execution. So that's where Miami's got to play, all right? Miami's got to play really, really well and sound in the execution department. And for the most part, I think they've done so. They've played 12 quarters in the college football playoff. And I think for 10 of those, they've played really, really clean football.
So is the blueprint, can the A&M blueprint work against Indiana? I guess that would be the next question from there. Because I don't think Indiana is going to be as reckless as A&M was at times, obviously, as you just pointed out. They want to out-responsible you, if that's a thing. Can Miami out-responsible Indiana, as you're talking about here, and are both of them just going to sit there and stare at each other and wait for the other one to blink?
So what scares me about the matchup from Miami's standpoint, and I can understand what Vegas is looking at other than expecting, and the line, expecting people to just – expect Indiana to roll, I think is why that line was set the way it was. But two things concern me. One, Indiana has been explosive versus everybody in the green area. Like the moment they get the ball into plus territory, Charlie Beckard and Surratt are due for a 35-yard explosive. Like, we saw it against Oregon. You saw it against Bama. They've done it all year. They did it against Ohio State on 3rd-and-2 to ice that football game in the Big Ten. So they're bound to be – and when I talk about explosive, I'm talking about 45-yard chunks, 40-yard chunks downfield when they find man-to-man coverage, because inevitably they force it. So that concerns me. It doesn't really matter how good you are at coverage either. Like, we learned that in the Fiesta Bowl. I didn't feel as if – apart from the Charlie Beckard touchdown that put them up 21-3, I did not think there was a single solitary moment where it was like, dang, that corner got beat like you know what. Like, that corner is nowhere near him. No, it's either back shoulder fades or, like, tremendous ball placement by the quarterback in Mendoza. So that right there worries me about anybody's matchup against this unit, because those receivers are NFL-bound and the quarterback's NFL-bound. No matter how good you are at defensive back, you're going to have problems with that. The other thing that worries me about Miami is that they weren't exactly clean for four quarters. I mentioned 10 of 12 quarters, they've played really, really clean football. Two of those came in their most recent football game, from my opinion. Like, they were bad from a protection standpoint. It's a great offensive line, and they were bad. For my money, bad at the offensive line protection standpoint in pass protection against an Ole Miss unit that, going into the game, I was like, on paper, they should be giving Carson Beck all the time in the world. My primary concern was, how will Ole Miss stop Miami? Look at this offensive line. I know what Ole Miss's defensive line is. They're pretty decent in the run game, and interiorly they're really good, but they don't have dominant, like, twitchy rusher or, like, great rushers, and I thought Miami was going to be fine. Nope. Carson Beck had to play hot most of the football game and was under pressure. And the way they were doing it was twisting stunts and chaos. Hey, buddy, that's what we got to play on Monday night. Like, that's what Indiana is. Indiana is not one of these, like, I got a bunch of Jimmies and Joes, I'm going to beat you. No, they beat you with X's and O's. They beat you with chaos. They beat you with confusion. So that concerns me as well about this matchup for Miami. But they can make this a 30-tote Mark Fletcher football game. They can do that. If you haven't seen this Miami running back, you're going to find out. He's 6'2" and a half, 230 pounds, and he runs downhill.
Yeah, you can't miss him. He's like a bowling ball covered in razor blades. Have fun trying to tackle the dude. Brooks Austin, the Film Guy Network on YouTube, recruiting director at SI. Follow him on social media. Great stuff. He's going to do a film breakdown as soon as he's done talking to us, and he's going to get it posted later, and you're going to be smarter for having watched it. Supreme ball knower at Brooks Austin, BA, here on You Better You Bet. Chris Mack in for Nick Costos. So, how does Indiana force Carson Beck to devolve back into late-stage Georgia Carson Beck and to make the mistakes mentally that he has not made in games of consequence down the stretch for Miami?
For me, like, when Carson makes mistakes, they're, like, I got it, too aggressive mistakes. Like, you have to make him feel like he has to play outside of himself in order to win the football game. That's the only time I've ever seen him be a problem. Like, honest to God, I think the kid's thrown 22 interceptions in the last 2 years. I think 15 of them we could sit there and go, probably not on the quarterback. Honest to God, like, 7 of the 12 or 8 of the 12 or whatever it was last year at Georgia were improper depth of wide receivers, bad breaks, like tips at the line of scrimmage, or just – like, things that he cannot control. For example, he threw a pick against Alabama where the wide receiver is supposed to be in a screen route. He is not. Like, he's busting out there with a missed execution, missed assignment. Like, those types of things aren't on the quarterback. I've always felt like this kid, unless you make him feel, like I said, like he's got to score 45 points today, he normally plays within himself. He normally protects the football. You will not, like, there's no tricking him normally. There's no, you know, you might get him to force a ball into a tight window that gets tipped and then intercepted. That's how you get him to turn it over. The interception he had against Ole Miss, not on the quarterback. Now, the other things that he did, I worry me sometimes. Like, he got Malachi Toney killed early in the football game. He got a tight end killed early in the football game because he sees tight windows as, I can put it there, results be damned. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes he does that because sometimes the game of football requires that. You know, I need you to make a play just as much as you need me to make one as a quarterback. So, and Miami's wide receivers, to their credit, they made every single one of them. the Lofton kid, the tight end, had an incredible catch over the middle. Tony had an incredible catch over the middle. The Marion Brown kid showed up out of nowhere for the biggest game of his career in that Fiesta Bowl. So I think that's the – a lot of people count Miami out. They are a championship-caliber football team, in my opinion, because of what college football requires you to do. What college football requires you to do is when your starting corner, number six, gets a targeting penalty and is out for the game, and we can debate whether or not it was a real targeting penalty, and then you got to throw a true freshman corner out there that was a three-star out of Louisiana, and it's game 15, game 16 at this point. That kid better be ready to play. Number 16 goes in there and goes bump and run man-to-man coverage with Jabron Stribling, who has won games for Ole Miss at this point this year, and breaks a ball up, gets off the field, gives the offense the ball back, and we go win a football game. That's what college football is, because these rosters and numbers are tighter than ever nowadays, and when the starter goes down, the backup better be ready to go with no drop-off.
Brooks, we only got about a minute here, so I'm going to ask you. Fernando Mendoza is probably going to go first overall. Is he first overall in an NFL draft any other year or just this year?
I don't know. Other years, there's probably a guy that goes one. Here's what scares me about him. He came from a system at Cal that was probably 22% RPO. He's in a system now at Indiana that is 25% RPO. We don't RPO on the Sunday League. We just don't. The line of scrimmage rules are different. The ability to get down the field are different. So a quarter of our plays are very much so reading leverage of defenders and a single solitary defender, right? And then making an accurate throw. We're about to take 90% of our snaps on Sunday with full field progressions. I'm not saying he can't do it, because I've heard him talk with support. I've heard him talk defenses. He's usually really smart. But we haven't seen him do it at a really, really high rate, at a consistent rate. So that would concern me, but he's certainly talented. He's really, really deadly accurate with the football. So if you're accurate and you're like a plus athlete, which he is, I think he's a good enough athlete, you'll be fine eventually. But we got to lean on a lot of things that we don't do a lot of right now. That's all I would say about him.
Brooks, great stuff, man. Love the breakdowns. Going to look for more of them leading up to Monday night's game between Miami and Indiana. The Film Guy Network on YouTube, recruiting director at SI. Follow him on social media at Brooks Austin, BA. Enjoy the last few sips of coffee and go get after it, brother. Thank you.
Y'all have a good one.
Brooks Austin here on You Better You Bet. Chris Mack in for Nick Costos today on Westwood One Sports. I want to clip, you know, when I do a solo show, I wrap it up towards the end of the show with the three stars of the day. What he had to say about Mark Fletcher Jr. there belongs in the three stars at the end of the show. That's what's getting lost, I think, in all of this Miami-Indiana talk, is Indiana's defense is damn good. But if Mark Fletcher starts to roll and gets going downhill, like I said, bowling ball covered in razor blades, it changes everything for this game and how Miami can beat Indiana. Coming up, how much are they willing to change in Pittsburgh, if at all? Tough decisions on the table for the Pittsburgh Steelers this offseason. We get into it next. Chris Mack in for Nick Costos here on You Better You Bet on Westwood One Sports.